This is Dr. Stan here at Greater Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for the survival of Christian civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views. And, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Buck Keeley, who's a master gardener, who's going to be talking to us about how to raise fruits and vegetables. And but before we get to that, let me just point out that I'm very, very concerned about the things that are going on over there in the Middle East today. Certainly Israel's now a second attack on the facilities there in Damascus, a massive bombing there apparently last night, blew up a area where they had a lot of intermediate-range missiles. And certainly Adas, who's the premier there, the president of Syria, said this is an act of war and we will retaliate. And certainly this is, now if there's another attack, we will consider we will be at war with Syria, with Israel. He apparently has said that he has given his commanders, those who control the missile batteries, permission that if there's another attack without an order from him, they will immediately launch a barrage of missiles on Israel. And remember, Israel's a very, very small a country with only a few cities, and of course, if they target those cities, they would simply wipe them out. And we're talking about Jerusalem, we're talking about Tel Aviv, we're talking about three or four other cities, and you would simply destroy the majority of the population of Israel if that should happen. We are on the edge of something very, very major in that area. And what do we talk about on the media? Well, the tragedy of this limousine breaking into flames and five women being killed, and I think that's a terrible thing. We very, very seldom, though, talk about the 70,000 innocent civilians who've been slaughtered in Syria as a result certainly of America's financial aid to the rebels there. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, the CIA and the Special Forces has troops stationed in both Jordan and Turkey, and they are arming and financing and training the rebels who are there involved in that civil war. And any thought that we're not involved in this or we aren't providing weapons is simply an effort to conceal the truth from the American people. And why then is this, what does this have to do with gardening? Well, it has to do with the fact that this could lead to some sort of an electromagnetic pulse attack on America. If certainly Syria is to fall, I believe Israel will attack Iran. Iran has threatened to take a reprisal on the United States. And we know that they've been practicing an electromagnetic pulse attack. And they've done this in the Caspian Sea from shipboard there. And they can certainly launch certainly a intermediate range missile from a ship in the Gulf of Mexico, and all they have to do is explode one weapon over Omaha, Nebraska at 300 miles, and they would wipe out the entire electronic grid in America, and we would be plunged into darkness. This is not imaginary, it's real. And this is why you should begin making preparations, hope and pray that you'll never need them. Begin making preparations so that you would know how to look after yourself. So that's why we have Buck Keeley on regularly. Hi, Buck. How are things going tonight?
I'm doing fine, Dr. Stan. Thanks for having me again.
Well, let's get into the background. Certainly, now, people should have their vegetable gardens in pretty well at this time, shouldn't they?
There should be folks up in the Midwest could be putting their gardens in again. That we had this late winter frost in Arkansas, the latest ever on record snowfall. We have family that lives in Oklahoma and Tulsa had snow. All of the folks that got their gardens out early in the Midwest, they're going to be planting again. And that happens sometimes when you garden. We're in a change of time of our global climate. Not my opinion made by man, but it is changing. And so those folks are going to have to replant and time for them to start all over. But most of the parts of the country ought to have their gardening started in one degree or the other, with the early winter plants going in, or if you're on to the south central area or down to your area. You ought to be having your tomatoes in the ground and your peppers in the ground. About all the tender plants should be in by now.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
You may have heard about the 90 essential nutrients or the Mighty 90 needed for good health. But with all the products out there, what exactly are they talking about? The Mighty 90 is 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 60 plant-derived minerals, and 2 essential fatty acids. So, now you know. But with all the products you see and hear advertised, what exactly do you buy to come up with the Mighty 90 and the right ratios to promote good health? Youngevity has made it easy with the Healthy Start Pack, which contains one canister of Beyond Tangy Tangerine Vitamin and Plant-Derived Mineral Complex, one bottle of Bone and Joint Enriching OsteoFX Plus, and one bottle of EFA Plus Essential Fatty Acids, all in the proper ratios to promote good health and vitality. For more information or to order, call 1-800-991-8730. That's 1-800-991-8730 and ask about business opportunities.
Disaster can strike at any time. That's why Americans spend billions on insurance policies. But what about investing into disaster preparedness supplies, especially food? After Hurricane Sandy, people waited weeks for help to arrive. Be prepared for anything with Mountain House freeze-dried foods, the finest in the industry, packed in heavy-duty double-enameled number 10 cans with over 99% of the oxygen removed for the longest shelf life of any product available. And the taste, absolutely delicious. Entrees, meats, vegetables, fruits, and desserts made in the USA. Just add hot water, wait 10 minutes, and serve. Save 25% on Mountain House number 10 cans, April 2nd through the 8th, with free shipping to the lower 48 states. Visit freezedryguy.com. That's freezedryguy.com. Or call 866-404-3663. 866-404-3663. Get 25% off April 2nd through the 8th. Act today. Don't miss out.
I guess it's Buck Keeley. Just talking about certainly that some plants are cold weather crops, others are hot weather crops. Certainly the tomatoes, the peppers are certainly hot weather. Certainly a lot of the beans are warm weather. Certainly the peas are cold weather. And you need to know certainly what sort of weather they want. And Buck was just saying that, well, basically when you talk about temperature, you talk about soil temperature, not air temperature. And I'd never thought of that, but basically he says you get down around 4 or 5 inches into the soil and the temperature is fairly constant both day and night. The only thing you want to be sure of course, is you don't get your crops in before the last frost. They come in before the last frost where you're going to lose them. If you have a question for Buck, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. But my suggestion to you, ladies and gentlemen, is you ought to start thinking about how, just in case that impossible situation should result when you can't go down to the store and buy food, that you at least know you have the thought process of how to go about putting in the crops on your own. So basically, that's one reason we have Buck with us on a regular basis, once a month on this station, just so that you can actually, if you have questions, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And you have to think about fertilizing. You have to think about certainly soil preparation. You have to think about the things that you can do to get your plants to be more productive. Now, Buck, what about certainly getting the tomatoes to put on blooms? Do we need to fertilize them? Can we use something like Miracle-Gro? What would we do to get our tomatoes to put out a lot of blooms so we'd get a lot of tomatoes?
Well, there's three things that's necessary for a plant to grow, whether it's a tomato plant or any other plant. That is soil and seed and water. Now, that's going to grow a plant. Now, the kind of plant you grow and the quality of the plant that you grow has some contingencies or dependencies. Your soil is very important for your speaking of tomato plants, that they need to be planted in a good, rich, composted soil because they're a high-production plant. Anybody that's ever grown tomatoes before knows that the average tomato plant will put out 100-plus pounds of tomatoes. And so it requires a very nutrient-rich soil. And the way you do that is by building your soil through composting and those things that you do in the off-growing season. And once that plant begins to grow, you give it the little extra boost it needs through fertilizer. Now, the seed that you grow is very important. That you want to grow an heirloom seed, not a seed that you buy from the big box store that's been hyper-hybrid. Those seeds that when you grow a plant have certain characteristics that's been bred in through multiple parents. And once that tomato or whatever fruit that it is that you're growing off of your vegetable plant produces, those seeds will not reproduce the same plant. So folks that are really concerned about sustainability, about being able to provide for themselves in case something happens, you want to make sure that you grow seed, fruit from seed that you can collect and harvest and replant. So that plant, the tomato plant as we're talking about, with a good heirloom seed placed in a good soil, when it begins to put on blooms and little fruits, then you want to fertilize it. And you need to remember, whatever you put in your garden, you eventually put in your body. So I would stay away from any chemical-based fertilizers and make sure that I stayed with a good natural fertilizer. We sell one on our website, or you could find one at your local nursery that some of them carry a good natural fertilizer. But basically what that fertilizer is going to have in it is bone meal, it's going to have seed meal, it's going to have calcium-based products in it, it's going to have volcanic matter in it for the trace elements. So it's going to have a good nutrient base, and when you put that on your tomato plant during growing season, it gives that tomato plant instant nutrients to put into the fruit, which makes that fruit more full of vitamins and nutrients, and also helps that plant produce more fruit.
Well, now, basically, because I go down to the nursery and I see these big bags of fertilizer and they say 666 or something like that on there. Basically, is that what you're talking about? What do those numbers signify?
The numbers signify the amount of nitrogen, potassium, and other products that's in there. And it's percentage-wise, it doesn't mean that it's 6% of that. It's 6% of the base of the product, so it's less than that, actually. And you're buying a product that has a lot of inertia material in it, that there's no value in it. It's kind of like when you get a pill from the pharmacy, it may have 3 or 4% active ingredient in it. The rest of it is in a inert media so that it can be absorbed in your body. And so most of the fertilizers you're buying, that big bag, has very little actually fertilizer in it. It's in the inert materials with it, so they can be broadcast on the garden and slowly absorbed into the soil. If they actually put those chemicals direct on the plant, it would kill them. And so they have to be slow released in the soil through the inert materials that's in it. And so that's the 666 you see as the percentage basis of the whole amount of nitrogen, potassium, and other phosphate is the three major ones. So that's the product you're getting when you buy it.
We've got Jay calling in from SoCal. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-295. Hey, Jay, do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Yes, sir. I was wondering, we're talking about potatoes, planting potatoes.
Yes.
I live here, like, in the Central Coast, Santa Cruz, sir. I was wondering, like, you know, what kind of potatoes that grow, you know, like, well here? And like, what time do you actually plant them, or my friends, and like, how should you harvest them? And then, you know, getting seeds grown for like next year because they like reproduce, I guess, right?
Okay, well, let's get the thoughts. What are the potatoes that would grow well here in the Central Coast of California? I know my son actually has put into potatoes, and they've just done just beautifully. I couldn't believe all the potatoes he was able to grow. But basically, what sort of potatoes should people be growing?
Potatoes is one of the most easy crops to grow and harvest of all the vegetables. They will grow in very poor soil. The better the soil, of course, the more production you're going to get. But the Russ, it's always a good standard potato. A Russ potato grow almost on concrete. That's tongue in cheek. But that they will grow in a very poor soil environment. And potatoes like to have loose soil, a sand-based soil. Obviously, they're a root crop, and they'll expand out. And they grow better in a loose soil. You can also container grow your potatoes. Container growing potatoes is very easy to do. You can get a 5-gallon bucket and throw in a few chunks of your seed potato in there and harvest anywhere from 7 to 15 pounds of potatoes out of a 5-gallon bucket. But the russets would go good. Potatoes, yellow Yukons would grow well. The mighty reds would do well. Most any potato will grow well where you're at. And if you're one to save seed potatoes, you don't have to go buy seed potatoes every year. Just save a few of your potatoes when you harvest and put them in a cool, dry place, ideally in someplace like a root cellar or someplace where a lot of moisture won't get there and it's dark. And those potatoes will keep through the winter, and come springtime, you'll have these potatoes that are putting on ice, and then just cut the ice off and plant them, and that would be your seed potatoes for the next year.
Oh, I was just amazed, really, certainly, how easy it was really to grow those potatoes. Okay, fine. Well, certainly, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment for our guest, Buck Keeley, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. Buck, how can people get in touch with you and get the various products that you have?
Well, the best way to get a hold of us is via the internet. And if you have internet accessibility, just go to your address bar and type in seedcatalog.com, all one word, seedcatalog.com, and that'll take you to our website. On our website, I encourage you to take time and read the articles. There's several good articles on the importance of non-genetically modified seeds, the importance of heirloom seeds for sustainability and renewability. And then after that, click on Shop for Seed. It'll take you inside of our store, and you'll find all of our products inside there, where we carry everything from what we call our value pack, which costs about 25 to 30% less than buying single pack, to our seed banks, which is for that long-term storage just in case, as well as the single pack. And if you don't have internet accessibility, the best way to get a hold of us is call toll-free, 1-888-866-9132, 1-888-866-9132. And Miss Susan, I will be glad to help you place your order via the telephone.
Well, no, we got some of your fertilizer, and we were going to put it on the plants. How much do you actually put around each individual tomato plant? You put this certainly down just around the base of the plant?
When you think about where to fertilize, you think about where the roots are for a plant. And generally, the roots are about the size of the foliage in its canopy. So if you have a bushing tomato plant that goes out quite a distance, then you'll look at putting that plant around maybe a foot, foot and a half away with fertilizer from the center of that plant. If you have a small vertical plant, such as a Rutgers tomato, about 6 or 8 inches. So kind of think of the canopy of the plant being the perimeter that you would put down the fertilizer. And it doesn't take a lot. It's kind of like vitamins. Most vitamins, if you over take vitamins, just flush through your system and you waste the vitamins in your body. Same thing with the plants when you over fertilize. When you water, it pushes that fertilizer down through the soil and eventually it pushes it beyond the reach of the roots. And so you want to make sure that you don't over fertilize, not because you'll hurt the plant. If you use an organic fertilizer, you'll never hurt your plant, but that you don't want to waste the fertilizer. So on a tomato plant, about a quarter of a cup full every 2 to 3 weeks around the base of your plant is more than enough.
About a quarter of a cup full every 2 to 3 weeks. Okay, fine. Well, of course, our guest is Buck Keeley. If you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment on growing vegetables or certainly things that you should be doing in preparation, learning how to look after yourself. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope the time never comes when we can't go down to the grocery store and buy food, but what would happen if it happened? Ladies and gentlemen, this is not an impossibility. You talk to the people I'm talking to in Washington, D.C., and many of them are frightened to death at the prospect of what's coming down the line. Give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California.
Hello, folks. This is Steve Day, the director of Home for Health Lifestyle Center. And over the past years, we have been blessed by witnessing folks plagued by chronic illnesses gain restoration and get back their health after coming through our live-in Christian health retreat. Today, sickness and disease is everywhere. Cancer, MS, diabetes, and chronic diseases plague us. But there is hope, and Home for Health can help. We're here to help you in your time of need, and we would encourage you to go to the Home for Health website, www.homeforhealth.net. That's www.homeforhealth.net. Or you can call us today at 888-642-9644. That's 888-642-9644. Call Home for Health today and start your healing journey now.
Home for Health, truly do unto self. Being free of disease is real well. Home for Health.
Americans love pills. America's 40 million seniors will have consumed 1.6 trillion pills during their lifetime, not counting vitamin pills. This is health journalist Bill Sardi. Americans are living longer an additional 18 years after they reach age 65. How will senior Americans spend that time? You've got it. Taking more and more pills to treat more and more disease. We need a better approach. How about a pill that promotes health rather than treats disease? That's where a pill I formulated comes in. It's called Longevinix, and it's a well-tested combination of herbs and vitamins proven to trigger genes activated by a limited-calorie diet, even mimicking physical exercise. Longevinix promotes healthy vision, heart pumping, immune response, blood clotting, and even mood. Call 1-866-405-4000 to order today. Healthy aging. Longevinix. Get started before you grow old. Call now. 1-866-405-4000.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Do you enjoy cooking? Would you like to learn the culinary secret that Barbara uses to enhance the flavor of Dr. Stan's food? Who's Barbara? She's Dr. Stan's wife. And what's her secret? She uses the delicious spices produced by Old Westport Spice and Trading Company. After using and enjoying their products for almost 20 years, Dr. Stan and Barbara decided they should offer their favorites to you. If you would like to please your family and enhance the flavor of your food, call 800-544-8927. That's 800-544-8927. I suggest you call today. Once again, the telephone number is 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess Buck Keeley. We're talking about gardening. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. Well, Sydney Buck. Sydney, what about the squash now? Sydney, you have the summer squash, you have the winter squash. First of all, how deep should you plant the seeds? I learned that from you a couple of days, programs ago. I never even thought about the significance of how deep you put the seed. And is there any way that position you should put the seed in when you put it in the ground? And should you put in one seed or several seeds in each pod?
Well, a good rule of thumb on planting your seed is twice the depth of the thickness of your seed. So when you think about a reddish seed, how small that is, you're talking about just a thin covering of soil on top of the seed. Well, if you look at a zucchini squash seed, it's about a 16th to 3/32nd of an inch thick. And so that gives you an idea you're going to put more soil on it than that. Just as a little anecdotal information, we had a young lady that we had working on our greenhouse this year, and she was helping us plant seed. And we had several flats of our seed that was behind almost a week coming up because of too much soil on them. And about half of the seed didn't germinate because the seed died before it could actually reach the surface to start photosynthesis. And so it's important not to overplant your seed in depth. That most of your garden seed will require dark to grow. And what that means is that if they're in direct sunlight, they won't germinate. So you do have to have soil on top of them so that they'll germinate. But if you put too much soil in there, you'll delay their ability to push through the soil and can actually cause the seed not to, to reach full maturity to germination because it can't push out of the soil. It's kind of like if you think about a little chicken inside of its egg, that as it tries to peck out of that egg, if it runs out of energy before it gets to the shell because the shell is too thick, the chicken's going to die. It's the same thing with the plant. So don't plant them too deep, about twice the thickness of the seed. And it is not crucial, but it's important not to over cover your seeds in soil. And what I usually do when I plant my seeds, for example, the squash that we were talking about, I berm up hill and I plant 3 to 4 seeds in a hill. And what I do is once that soil is all mounded up there and it's loose, I push the seed in just below the surface level, about 1/8 of an inch, and then I water the plant, the seed, the hill, and I make sure that the seeds don't show after I water. And if I have that, then I'll know about just the right depth for the squash seed. For things that are smaller, like your broccoli seeds or your radish seeds or your cabbage seeds or your carrot seeds or your onion seeds, they're very small, that I've put them on the ground, broadcast them on the ground as far apart as I can, but enough coverage that I had to come back and do a little thinning. And then I take some soil and I dust it on top of them. I don't dig a trench for them. I just put the soil right on top of them, on top of the ground, and they'll take off and grow just fine.
All right, now, how about the Hubbard squash and the other squash, pumpkins, watermelons, things of that sort?
Well, your larger vining plant products like your winter squash or your pumpkin and your watermelons, they have a longer growing season than your summer squash, obviously. And so you plant them about the same time, as soon after last frost as you can get the seed to the ground. But it takes longer for them to grow and reach maturity because they're growing a much larger fruit of the plant. So, you know, when you think about the giant watermelons that'll get to be 800 or 900 pounds, you're talking about how much time it actually takes to produce that much flesh. So, but when you think about the smaller summer winter squash like acorn squash or Hubbard squash, they grow at a relatively slow rate, but they're growing very thick, heavy cell structured walls. And so they take a longer time to grow. And the same type of growing techniques, I mound up a hill, put 3 to 4 seeds around the hill, and I allow about a 6 square foot area per plant. And folks who have planted your winter squash, your vining squash, knows that they will go out for sometimes 15 or 20 foot with runners and put on fruit. So they will take over a part of your garden, which is not a bad thing. But you want to provide enough space for them that they have ample soil area to draw the nutrients to provide the amount of product they're going to be producing.
So, because I'm using containers, then you'd only just put the squash in, maybe one squash in one of these 28-inch containers?
Yes, that would be about right, because it's going to take a lot of nutrients for them to provide the amount it's going to need for the winter squash product.
Okay. And then, Chris, would you fertilize them as soon as you put them in the ground, or would you wait until they actually come up?
Different people have different ideas on that. I don't generally fertilize under my plant unless I'm transplanting like a tomato plant.
Mm-hmm.
But after they begin to grow, particularly your vining plant like your winter squash, I fertilize them throughout the year so that they have plenty of nutrients to grow.
All right, telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-2295. Give us a call.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done. Get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
For many decades, these great United States have had security and plenty because of the thousands of small farms which supply our every nutritional need. For generations, these dedicated men and women have supplied us with fresh food at reasonable cost. There is a chance that our food supply could be cut off in the event of a national emergency. You should carefully consider planting your own home garden. A seed bank from seedcatalog.com will make it almost easy. A seed bank contains every seed you'll need to plant a basic survival garden. All heirloom and all ready for you to create that special, necessary outdoor resource. Where can you find out more? Call 888-866-9132 or go to seedcatalog.com. Call 888-866-9132 right now and order seed for this year's garden. Seedcatalog.com.
So you finally decided to start taking a vitamin supplement. Those chewables and tablets are fine if you don't mind paying for something that is only absorbed about 4 to 6%. However, a liquid supplement can have a 90% absorption rate if you choose the right one. Youngevity offers a wide variety of liquid supplements with a 90% absorption rate or more. Beyond Tangy Tangerine may be the best one ever invented. It starts as a liquid, then is freeze-dried like those instant coffees into a crystal. Then all you have to do is add a couple of scoops to water. No refrigeration, no fuss, no mess. Not only do you get a complete multiple vitamin, Beyond Tangy Tangerine also has minerals, and it tastes fantastic. You'll want to drink it all day long. So the next time you reach for a vitamin supplement, reach for Beyond Tangy Tangerine from Youngevity. For more information or to order, call 1-800-991-8730. That's 1-800-991-8730 and ask about business opportunities.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Buck Keeley. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question, well, Buck, I asked you earlier, and I'm not certain. I really didn't get your answer to this. Certainly, will the fertilizer help our tomato plants to put on blossoms, or will they come on spontaneously? Or is there anything we can do to encourage the plants to put on blossoms?
The fertilizer will not cause it to put on blossoms unless your plant is in soil that is not sustaining the tomato plant. It's a natural process. It's kind of like the process of any renewable plant, that it has its own time that it puts on its blossom. Now, there are things that can cause the blossoms to drop after they come home. Certain diseases, mosaic diseases or tobacco diseases on the plant can cause the plant blooms to fall off. But they should naturally come, and if they're not coming on, it's usually a sign of either stress where it's had really cold nights and the plant hasn't fully matured, or a deprived nutrient in the soil. And so you really can't encourage the blooms to come on. That you can only help it if there's either a bad soil or if it's diseased, there's not much you can do other side to pull the plant out. But once the blooms come on, then that's where fertilizers help. Once the blooms come on behind that, the fruit will pop, and the fertilizers then will help the fruit develop. But the only way fertilizer will help the blooms come on is if you're in really poor soil, and that's typically not a case in most gardeners.
All right, fine. Well, now, what about fruit trees? Certainly, is there any trick to getting fruit trees? And I'm talking about apples and oranges and tomato and certainly other pear trees. Is there any trick at all to growing those?
Well, I'm not an expert in fruit trees, although we do have a small orchard we keep. I do have some knowledge about it. And I do know this, one of the most important things you do for your orchard whether it's an apple tree or pear tree or stone fruit such as a cherry or a peach, is adequate water. Fruit trees during production time need an inch of water a week, and that's to the size of the foliage of the tree. So if you have a dwarf or a semi-dwarf apple tree and the foliage goes around a six-foot diameter from the trunk, you need to have an inch of water on that six-foot diameter of that tree. If you have a large Johnny apple tree like we have that has a foliage cover around 20 foot, that means that root system goes out at least that far. And so you need to give a full 1 inch water per week. If it doesn't happen naturally through rainfall, you need to provide it through irrigation. A second is this pruning. If you don't prune your tree, you're supporting a lot of foliage on the tree that doesn't produce. And it is dead wood, as they would say. It's wood that doesn't produce fruit. So you need to harvest your fruit in the fall time. And when the early winter comes to midwinter, when the tree sap begins to go back down, you need to vigorously prune your tree. You need to cut back any of the branches that are growing straight up, the sapling branches off of the ground. You need to trim back the length of the branches. If you don't know how to prune your tree and you have internet accessibility, Google it. It'll show you step by step how to prune your tree. So it's very important to prune your tree. It's very important to have enough water. And then, second to that, it's very important it has good nutrients. And if your soil is not a good, hardy soil, it would do you well to compost around your trees every year. In the area of the canopy of the trees, how far out you want to put compost on the ground around your trees. There's a natural compost that will come from fruit trees, from the leaves that fall, from the uneaten fruit, but it's not enough to sustain that tree if you're not in good, rich soil. So composting your soil around your tree, pruning your tree every late winter, early spring, and then making sure that you have an inch of water during production time will ensure that you have a good harvest of your fruit tree.
Well, there's just so much to know and so a little to So most of us living in a city, you know, where we go down to the store and buy our food and our fruit and our food, we're really unaware of all of these things. But I think that we really need to learn how to go about taking care of ourselves. I hope it never comes to that. But I will tell you that I know people in Washington, D.C., and we've talked to them a number of times. Some of them we've interviewed, some we haven't. But they are very, very concerned about a very real threat to our country, and we are totally unprepared for it. And it would be a very easy thing to make the preparations for an electromagnetic pulse attack so that we would not lose electricity. But if we lost electricity, the whole infrastructure of our society could collapse. And for one reason, whatever that may be, every effort on the part of Congress or responsible people in government to do what needs to be done has been very effectively blocked. And the question is, why? Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Our guest, of course, is Buck Keeley, and we're simply talking about the basic things, certainly, that you need to know about gardening. Now, if people get in touch with a Buck, what can they get from you, and what should they have on hand in case there was, and hope and pray it does never happen, but a cataclysmic event where certainly the world we know certainly ceases to exist, and electromagnetic pulse is a perfect example of that. But what certainly would they get from you if they were to contact you, and what can they get from you? What should they be getting from you to have on hand?
Well, when we began this journey of preparation about 15 years ago, we took on a philosophy, my wife and I, to plan for the best but prepare for the worst. So we have a preparation plan in mind so if something happens that we're not caught without resources. And I would encourage every one of your listeners who are those who are really concerned about the future like we are, seeing on the horizon the storm clouds of change, to prepare for what that worst event could be. And you've mentioned the EMP several times. And certainly, if anybody's read the book One Second After, knows that this is the worst-case scenario for any person to have to live through. And the first thing you want to have is the ability to provide food for yourself. That it's not going to be a pretty sight if this happens. There will be people killing for food. There's no question about it in large cities. But for folks that's preparing, what you do is you have three different levels of of preparation. First is immediate. Everyone should have food they can immediately access, whether it is food they preserve like we have. We don't have much long-term storage that you buy. Most of ours is prepared food that we've canned or dehydrated. So you need to have food that you can immediately put your hands on. Grow a garden, can your food, dehydrate your food, and store your food. Second is you need to have that immediate food that can be grown. Sprouts is the number one thing that everyone should be learning to do. In 5 to 7 days, you can have a very hearty, nutrient-rich food that is fresh without having any sunlight, without having any nutrients to put on it, without having a garden. All it takes is the sprouting seed, a sprouting bag, and water to put on them. And in 5 to 7 days, you'll have this very nutrient-rich food substance you can have. And then the third is long-term renewable food, and that's where you have seed to plant your garden. If you have bought seed at the big box store, you have hyperhybrid seeds. They are not sustainable. They're not renewable. They will not reproduce. You need to have heirloom seeds that are not hyperhybrid, and that's all that we sell. And so on our site, we have for you those things that prepares you for second and third level. The first level you have to do. The second level where we have the sprouting seeds for that 5 to 7 day window for fresh, nutritious food. And then we have the seeds for the planting of your garden. Everyone should have seeds in their hands to plant, and everyone should have a seed bank that they have stored just in case. The seed bank will provide not only seeds for your garden, but bartering and trading for the things that you need other than seeds. The vegetable is the very beginning of the source of nutrients for the human food chain, whether it is eating a vegetable out of your garden, a carrot or a radish or a potato or a tomato, or it's putting that food in animals. We feed our chickens out of our garden. The winter squash generally carries our chickens through the winter. They're free-range chickens. So it's not just food that you're going to eat, but it's product you're going to grow to feed the animals that you hope to have producing your eggs or protein from. So we sell on our site what we call value packs. That's where we combine together the kinds of seeds that you need for a garden, whether it's a urban garden or a small backyard garden or a large backyard garden. And we sell those about 25 to 35% less than what you would pay if you bought those seeds at single packet value. And then we have what we call our seed bank. We have a basic seed bank, which will plant about an acre garden of vegetables and grains. And then also a personal seed bank, which is about a half acre of vegetables and grains. Or we will provide a seed bank for you if you buy more than $50 a single packet, and we'll pack that in there. Now, what a seed bank is we take the seeds, we put them in a Mylar bag. A Mylar bag is a metal spun fiber bag, which is impervious to insects, light, and moisture. And we seal the seeds in that Mylar bag, and then we put them inside a tri-wall PVC rubberized pipe and seal it in there. And what that does is it makes the seeds safe from the things that will destroy it. The things that destroy seeds are water and light and heat. And you provide the third level of protection by putting that seed bank either in your freezer in the house or burying it a couple of foot deep in your garden and cover it. We talked about how that the consistency of the temperature down a few inches or down a couple of feet, that it's even more consistent. Or put it in the coolest room of your house, someplace where it never gets above 100 degrees. Seeds will die at about 140 degrees and will not reproduce. But they'll keep even down to sub-zero temperatures without doing any damage. So the cooler the temperature you put them in, the better. But everyone should have in their possession seeds they're currently planting. They need to be learning how to sprout with seeds that they can have immediate nutritious food, and then they need to have a seed bank for that just in case.
All right, fine. You have these sprouting seeds, and certainly, basically, you know, how large is the supply of the sprouting seeds that you have on hand?
It takes about a quarter a cup of seeds to produce enough sprouts to feed 4 people for 3 days. And we sell our seeds, and most of our seeds are in 4-ounce packages, which is enough for about 2 weeks for 4 people a sprout to eat. So that we keep, and once again, I hate to use the word prepper, but we've been preparing for the just-in-case for some time. We keep about 1 pound in reserve of broccoli, 1 pound of clover, 1 pound of alfalfa, and 1 pound of mung bean that we keep reserved so just in case we can get our hands on them and grow them immediately. But if you're not sprouting, if you've not eaten fresh sprouts, there is nothing as good as fresh sprouts. We sprout every week. I grow two large containers of sprouts every week that my wife and I eat because they're great on salads. They're great to cook with. If you're gluten intolerant, if you'll sprout your wheat seed, it'll help you with your gluten intolerance because it reduces the amount of gluten in your bread when you bake it. So sprouting is a great thing to do. If you're not currently sprouting, I encourage you to do it. And that time when you need to do it, you'll understand how it works. If it comes up that suddenly that our food supply has been restricted, you won't be dependent on trying to run down and find some food. You can grow your own in 3 to 5 days.
Well, can you sprout a wheat, wheat kernels?
Yeah, the sprouting of the wheatgrass, there's two ways to deal with the wheatgrass. There's some folks that soil grow wheatgrass where it kind of looks like 4-inch to 6-inch lawn turf, and they cut it off with scissors, and they make a wheatgrass drink out of it. And like what we do with the wheatgrass is we sprout it, and when it gets opened up and sprouted out to where the coils is unwound and the little plant is there, we then grind it into our wheat flour and have that into our wheat bread. We add that in when we make our bread, and it lowers the gluten count of the bread. At the same time, it provides a real rich flavor to your bread. It's a real nice bread when you do that. So that's the way we use our wheat seed.
Well, but certainly do you actually just use the regular kernels to make wheat with as well, or do you make it all out of the wheat sprouts?
Yeah, the same wheat that you sprout, you can put it in the ground, it will grow the wheat plant and put on the wheat head. And so it's all the same seed. And like I said, there's some the folks that are listening knows what wheatgrass is. Sold in natural food stores. It's very expensive, but basically all it is wheat seed that they sow in containers, let it grow up to about 6 inches tall, and they sell you this wheatgrass that people then, like I said, they cut with scissors and they put it in a blender for their wheatgrass drink. And you can grow that yourself for pennies on the dollar what you're buying it for at the health food store. If you're a wheatgrass user, just grow your own. It's as simple as growing grass in your backyard, and you put it on your windowsill in a tray.
Well, I suppose there are all sorts of tricks and things that you've learned through the years in preparation for the very real possibility that the difficult times are ahead. And Sydney, I don't know what is planned. I don't know what the elite are planning, but I do know that everything points to the fact that we are in real trouble. In fact, I was reading an article by Richard Haass. It's in the latest Time magazine. Now, that name may not mean much to most of our listeners, but Richard Haass is the director of the Council on Foreign Relations, the president of the Council on Foreign Relations. He's one of the leading internationalists. He's actually a member of the Trilateral Commission. And whenever he writes something, I like to read it because I want to know what they're thinking. And this latest article in the latest Time magazine, he sounds just almost like you listen to Radio Liberty. He's talking about the economic collapse in America, not if, but when. He says there is literally no way out of our current situation, and he's even suggesting that our foreign policy has been a disaster, and because we ought to start thinking about trying to protect ourselves here at home, because we can't help anybody else in the world if our economy collapses. Now, this is the president of the Council on Foreign Relations, Richard Haass. This is a member of the Trilateral Commission. And when he's writing an article like that, I don't know whether he's trying to confuse us or he really shares many of the concerns that we share about what is really going on. But ladies and gentlemen, we live in very, very uncertain times. If you have a question for Buck, we're almost out of time. But my plea with you is begin making your preparations. Hope and pray you never need it. But if you do need it, at least you'll have some idea what to do. And this is why we have Buck on, certainly on a monthly basis, to actually hope that people will begin making their preparations. And they'll have some thought process about things that most of us, well, certainly I never learned this in school, but you need to get it from somebody who's been doing it for some time. What are your parting thoughts for our listeners this evening, Buck?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you, Dr. Stan, for being the watchman on the wall, that is alerting people that things are not going to be the same. Things are changing. We don't know what it's going to be. We're going through a tunnel. We don't know what the other side is going to be like, but it's not going to be the same. And I encourage your listeners to take a proactive stand and start preparing for them, the ones they love, that they might be able to have an edge on what's about to happen. And the number way you can do that, number one way you can do that is provide for your family something to eat when the times come when the other people are hungry. So learn to garden, get your seed, and start growing immediately so that when the time comes, you're not a novice, but you're an experienced gardener.
And the things that you can't get by without is water and food. You need water and food to shelter. This the essence for survival and certainly all the other things we have. Wonderful, but survival may very well be the major issue. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And I'm going to let you go, Rick. Buck, thanks very much. Appreciate you being with us.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. Blessings to you.
Hello, folks. This is Steve Day, the director of Home for Health Lifestyle Center. And over the past years, we have been blessed by witnessing folks plagued by chronic illnesses gain restoration and get back their health after coming through our live-in Christian health retreat. Today, sickness and disease is everywhere. Cancer, MS, diabetes, and chronic diseases plague us. But there is hope, and Home for Health can help. We're here to help you in your time of need, and we would encourage you to go to the Home for Health website, www.homeforhealth.net. That's www.homeforhealth.net. Or you can call us today at 888-642-9644. That's 888-642-9644. Call Home for Health today and start your healing journey now.
Home for Health, truly do unto self. Being free of disease is real well. Home for Health.
There is a disturbing trend here in these United States that is progressing unnoticed and without constraint. From the Supreme Court to the smallest county seat, we have seen the judiciary make decisions which are more legislative than interpretive. Our founding fathers designed our three-part governmental system to have checks and balances upon each other. Each branch of the government has now taken upon itself power that was never intended for it to have. The judicial branch in particular needs reform. We must pass laws which bring a renewed sense of justice to our nation's court system. I urge you to go to judicialreformnow.com. That's judicialreformnow.com. There you can find out what you can do to stem the tide of judicial malpractice. judicialreformnow.com.
Most men, when they reach 60 years of age, have urinary tract problems. They have to urinate frequently during the day, and they have to get up several times every night. What's the solution? Many men use a herbal product called Prostate Support. It contains saw palmetto and stinging thistle. It's available from Radio Liberty. Dr. Stan takes Prostate Support and recommends it. And thousands of men take Prostate Support every day because it relieves their urinary tract symptoms. If you would like to try Prostate Support, call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Once again, the telephone number for Prostate Support is 800-544-8927. And I suggest you call today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly this is the time when I need to remind our listeners out all across America, all across the world, that our ministry is primarily listener-supported, and if you're in a position to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, we'd love to welcome you. And if you're not in a position to help us, we ask you to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection, because there are powerful spiritual forces working behind the scenes, intent upon bringing about a one-world government, a one-world financial system, a one-world religion. And, Chris, this is part of the conspiracy against Christianity, the effort to destroy Christianity, which they've done so effectively here in large segments of our society, or at least to change the thrust of Christian teaching. And lastly, of course, and most few people understand, but the ultimate objective is to install a one-world ruler who will be the Antichrist. And once you understand that, this all begins to make sense. Well, certainly we hope if you're in a position to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, you will. If you'd like to know more about the threat, and I'm not talking about an imaginary threat, I'm talking about something that could happen tomorrow. That would be the threat of an EMP attack. Now, this could come either from a solar flare, and basically it's time that we had one, and basically we had one in 1859, and basically it simply wiped out the entire telegraph system of our nation. Today, if we were to have an electromagnetic solar storm, it would knock out the entire electronics of our country, and we would be back to the way it was at the beginning of the 19th century. This is not imaginary. It's real. That's what the Congressional Commission that studied this determined, both the 2004 report, which we offer, and the 2008 report, which you can get on the Internet. But the 2004 report is available through Radio Liberty. And basically, this is why every member of Congress, both Republicans and Democrats, voted that we should immediately try to remedy the situation. But mysteriously, for some unknown reason, nothing was done. You have to ask yourself why. It doesn't make sense. Most of what's going on today doesn't make sense, unless, of course, there are other forces at work. And, of course, this is our contention. There really are demonic forces. There really are forces aligned by God. And I do believe that God brings his judgment on nations. For God gave us life. The God who gave us life gave us liberty. But could the liberty of a nation be secure when the conviction has been forgotten that liberty is the gift of God? I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, and his justice will not sleep forever. Those are the words of Thomas Jefferson, chiseled into the beautiful marble, white marble of the Jefferson Memorial there in Washington, D.C., and never quoted. And we have to ask ourselves why. And basically, you have to understand that if God is just, his justice will not sleep forever. Is he going to bring his judgment on America through an EMP attack or some other method? Well, ladies and gentlemen, you should make your preparations accordingly. But if you'd like to get our 4-CD set on the danger of an EMP attack with national leaders telling you what the fear is, if you'd like to get the DVD, The Threat of an EMP Attack, I'll put out by Henry Cooper, and incidentally, if you haven't been to his website, his latest treatise just came out today, is very, very good. Just go to highfrontier.com, highfrontier.com, or look up Ambassador Henry Cooper and read his latest article. It just came in by the internet today, and it is covers every aspect of the things that you need to know about not the imaginary, but the very real threat of an electromagnetic pulse attack. Now, you can get all the various items I mentioned, plus we carry the book of A Nation Forsaken, written by Michael Maloof, who spent 30 years with the Defense Department when he retired. He was a senior analyst reporting directly to the Undersecretary. His book, A Nation Forsaken, is available along with the 4-CD set on the threat of an EMP attack, the DVD, The Threat of an EMP Attack, and the 2004 Congressional Commission Report. You need to get this information, anything we produce, you have our permission to copy and get out, help get people aware of what's going on, and then please pray for America, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.
Let us swear allegiance to a land. Let us all be grateful for a land so fair as we raise our voices in a solemn prayer. God bless America. And that I love, stand me.
This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Christian civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and for the next hour, they're going to be the views of our friend Barry Shamish, who's an investigative reporter. He spent 30 years in Israel uncovering things that were going on over there, and eventually he uncovered certain dark forces working at the highest levels of the Israeli government. And because he began to talk about them, there were threats against his life, and he was forced to come to the United States. And certainly, of course, but he still keeps up with what's going on there. He has all sorts of friends and informants in Israel keeping him abreast of what's going on. And then, of course, on a weekly basis, almost weekly basis, Barry keeps us aware of what's going on over there. Because believe me, ladies and gentlemen, the things that are happening in the Holy Land today will have a great impact upon your life and my life in the coming weeks and months. Barry Shamish, thank you so very much for being with us.
Always a pleasure.
Well, basically, what do you hear? We actually hear that Israel had their second attack on Syria.
A third, I think.
Well, maybe it's the third one. Anyway, under any circumstances, what do you hear from Israel about this? And certainly, is this going to end, or certainly is Syria going to retaliate? Is Israel going to invade Syria? What's going to happen over there? Do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I've been trying. All right. You informed me 5 days ago that Israel was on alert, and you know, in Israel, big deal. They're on alert day and night. But you also told me that finally they're going to start a war with Iran. That's not what happened. All right. What happened is this is what they say. Okay. I've got a major problem, and it is really a major, major shutdown of information. Look, I hear music already.
No. Go right ahead. That was just the wrong button got pressed. Go ahead.
All righty. Look, what they say makes sense, that they bombed a missile site and the missiles were going to Hezbollah. And all I can say is what took so long. Hezbollah's already got an estimated 60,000 missiles. Many of them could smash Tel Aviv to bits. What took so long is apparently, again, I'm guessing now. I'm going to go on to stuff later that I'm better at. But I have to guess on this, that Hegel visited and permission was given for this attack. And I say that because Obama was surprisingly conciliatory after the attacks, saying that Israel has every right to do self-defense and stuff like that. So it was with American permission. I'm gonna guess that 90% Hegel visited, gave the permission, and then the attack.
Oh, and then for our listeners out there, Hegel's the Secretary of Defense, so go right ahead.
Oh, everyone knows
well,
that Chuck
is... Well, not necessarily, but you go right ahead.
All right. Now, I've been getting... I'm sure it's the music.
You have the music, but you go ahead. I'll stop.
Well, my good friend David Shedro, who really does know the CFR, sent me two CFR witnesses... Members, I'm sorry, wrote for the New York Times about this attack, like they knew too much, so I got that theory that CFR was behind it, and again, no proof, but you know, a decent evidence anyways, and then I got calls from Israel, and they know nothing except it's extremely tense.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. All right, Barry, you're just saying that things are extremely tense over there. Go ahead.
look, just everyone is working on theories. The government is not even admitting there was an attack. And if you saw the videos of the attack on the news, there sure was an attack. They abuse, again, from Israel's point of view, getting rid of those missiles is not stupid. But Israel sticks out like a sore thumb in all this mess. Look, you have to figure that you've got one, alliance between Iran, Syria, and the Hezbollah. They're the Shiite alliance, even though, my goodness, the Alawites aren't necessarily Shiites. They're unique amongst themselves, but neither here nor there. That's one branch of the alliance. But the enemies, well, Israel has now, in the good graces of Turkey, who really, really don't want this basically Iranian alliance, but it's a Shiite alliance winning. Turkey doesn't think that's good for them. And actually, Israel's on the side of the Sunnis. And they're rooting for them to knock out Syria, Assad Syria, because Assad Syria is winning. Assad is winning. The rebels are losing. They can't fight much longer. And that means that, well, this Shiite alliance is going to win. All right? If things keep going, it will win. Now, what we learn from this attack is, number one, Syria has terrible air defenses. Terrible! All right? And I know a little about this. I was a missile operator. That's what I did in the Air Force, the Israeli Air Force. I shot anti-aircraft missiles. You should have knocked down a plane. My goodness. So how come you didn't knock down the plane? How come they could just fly into Syria, bomb the hell out of the place, and, by the way, the most sensitive targets in the place, leave without any damage? So you've got a real problem. Look, that's a very poor performance by Syria. Terrible. All right? From that point of view, Israel had a tremendous victory that the Sunni alliance, who don't like Israel, let's not kid ourselves, but the worst of enemies and the best of friends.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly Mary is trying to explain what is really going on over there. And basically, you have two Muslim sects, one of the Sunnis and the other is the Shia Muslims. And the Assad, who, of course, runs Syria, is affiliated with the Shia side. There are different sects, but they're very close to the Shia. So basically, you have Iran, or you have Hezbollah, you have And then, of course, you have Syria, and then you have Hamas. So they're all certainly, Hamas is more of not.
They're Sunnis who are, again, worst of enemies, best of friends.
Okay, fine. But then on the other side, you have the Sunni Muslims, and that's Saudi Arabia and most of the rest of them. So basically, you don't have that many Shia, but it's primarily, because you have, basically you have Iran, you have Iraq, because basically Iraq is predominantly Shia, and then, of course, you have Syria. So basically, you have this division.
You've got the sore thumb in all this. You've got Israel.
Right, and of course, Israel basically
bombed Syria.
Right. But basically, Israel bombed Syria, and what a point that Barry made is that they got away with it. Basically, Syria does not have adequate anti-aircraft to bring down the Israeli jets, which suggests that
or attack Israel.
Right. So go right ahead, Barry.
Come on, after an attack like that, if you do nothing, you're saying you're very, very weak. If you don't react to an attack on your capital, apparently it was quite an attack. Some of the reports have been saying, again, we don't know if they're accurate or not, but apparently you had the equivalent of a 4.5 scale earthquake. That's how powerful the explosions were in Damascus. Israel walked in and really leveled parts of that town. Now, what can you say? That should have been the signal right then and there to attack Israel. Well, it didn't happen.
In other words, Assad did not declare war. He said, well, if it happens again, we're going to declare war. Well, how many attacks do you have before you declare war?
Why didn't Hezbollah shoot off 10,000 missiles? All right? They had the opportunity. Why didn't Hamas shoot 10,000 missiles at southern Israel and Hezbollah at the rest of the place? It didn't expand. All right.
I'm glad for Israel's point of view it didn't happen. We have to ask ourselves why and what the future holds. But go right ahead.
Oh, somebody is stirring the pot. And that's, again, my CFR expert source says it's them. And you know what? I'm not going to doubt him. He's got his evidence. But what you've got in the Middle East right now should have been a war.
Well, I really believe that the attack, this is my thought, was really an effort to get Assad to respond and attack Israel. And then, of course, Israel would be justified in suddenly invading Syria. But Assad didn't do it. I mean, the logical thing would have been to respond, and he didn't do it. So obviously, he doesn't want to give Israel a justification for going to war. So go right ahead.
Oh, I don't. You sure? Or maybe he's just chicken, right? He saw that he can't stop the Israeli Air Force, and he's justifiably shaking his boots. The fact of the matter is, once again, America backed Israel publicly, and I found that it was just surprising that Obama became so conciliatory to the Israeli position. I think the Americans were behind this. And again, I'm going to mention this again. Assad was on the verge of putting an end to the rebellion. The rebels, they're gone. They can't, there's nothing left of them. At that point came the attack, which I'm going to say it again. From Israel's point of view, if these were missiles going to Hezbollah, what took you so long? There, I summarized it best.
All right,
fine.
Very good. I wanted to get your take on it, and I appreciate that. Okay, go ahead.
Look, we're going to go back to... Look, by the way, before I dive into what I spent a lot of time on, and it's incredibly important, but nonetheless, this has been a busy, busy week. Do you remember Ben Ziegler? He was the Australian Mossad agent who died in Israeli custody 4 months ago. No, it was 5 months ago.
Okay, yes, I do.
Well, there was the Israeli legal system had a bit of a council, and well, legally they came up with, well, yes, he died under control, under our control, and he shouldn't have died, but no one was responsible. That was the conclusion of the Commission of Inquiry.
Well, let me just, for our listeners out there, this young man was working for the Mossad, had betrayed a number of Israeli agents, and basically he was arrested and put in prison and kept there for a period of time, and then all the estimates are, all the suspicions are, that he was actually killed by the Mossad in prison. Of course, they denied that. He said, oh, no, he committed suicide there. He was being watched all the time. And, oh, shucks, he just managed to get away from the camera where we couldn't see him, and he committed suicide. Nobody really believes that. They believe that he was killed. That certainly is really a message to anybody else who works for the Mossad who's going to certainly betray Israel. But go ahead.
Yeah, it's a teensy bit more complicated, but you're right. Overall, it was the Shabak internal security that was in charge of his little cell. It gets complicated. Whatever, somebody decided that, you know what, it's better that nobody's guilty. Right? And that's it. This guy dies. His family, by the way, I don't know what's keeping them quiet. He came from a very prominent Australian Jewish family. And I would be hopping mad if this was the verdict and my son's death. Nonetheless, that also happened this week. There's a lot of stuff that happened this week, but I'm going to go for the big one. It was only 6 days ago, my goodness. He arrived, 7 days ago. President Shimon Peres flew to Italy to meet Pope Francis, among other things, that began just a week ago. Now, look, we'll go through this. It's not the Pope that interests me. I know all about him. And by the way, I've never heard of a Pope naming himself after a talking mule. That part I don't understand yet, but let's go to the big stuff. Paris went to Assisi, which is the headquarters. Well, hundreds of Franciscan monks live there. And he went to their main basilica. And get this, he received the first ever, never been given before, a new Medal of Honor for Peace was given to Shimon Peres. By the way, here's a quote from the Franciscans, for his unique contribution to dialogue and the cause of peace. All right, great. This piece of trash, piece of metal, never given before. You have to understand, Peres loves prizes. He's got a whole career of prizes. He won the Nobel Peace Prize. He shouldn't have. Oh, another story. Kerry Christensen on the Nobel, on the committee, told everyone who listened to him, but I think it was mainly the Jerusalem Post, that Peres bribed the Nobel committee, gave him $100,000 to give him the Peace Prize. It was supposed to be only Arafat and Rabin, but Peres wanted in as well. Now, I got to tell you, I got terrific information, and one of these days I may do a whole show on this. Me and my partner, well, I met Ron Pudak, one of the two Israelis who signed the Oslo Peace Accord. All right? A really good story, by the way. And you're not going to get the full one, but you're going to get the general one tonight. I was at a Hanukkah party. Lenny Wolf was my friend. Very left-wing, but I have friends from all sectors. And he said how, this, by the way, was in December of, or January of 94, just after the peace accord, so-called peace accord, was signed. Now, remember, Oslo was signed in November, and the Vatican Accord was signed 2 weeks later in December of 94. And Lenny says to me, how would you like to interview Ron Pudak? And I said, sure, sounds great. Within 2 days, my partner was Joel Bainerman at the time. We had a little newsletter called Inside Israel, which somehow is that information keeps staying alive. Me and Joel went to a Tel Aviv coffee house. I said to Joel before he even got there, I said, I'll bet you anything. He's got the left-wing uniform, which, you know, wireframe glasses and a vest. And there's a way the left in Israel dress. I said to Joel, I'll bet you anything. The first guy that comes in dressed like that is Ron Pudak. Well, that was him, all right.
Okay, now, so he comes in and what happens?
All righty, we're going to talk about the stuff he told us was amazing. Another time we'll do this. The big one was that Rabin hid Oslo from Paris.
Rabin did what now?
Hid Oslo. The negotiations for the so-called Peace of Oslo. Rabin was prime minister. Paris was foreign minister. Rabin sent him on useless.
Hold the thought. Go right ahead, Barry.
Rabin sent Peres on utterly worthless missions while keeping the wheels. It was Ron Pudak, and he had a partner, by the way. Nonetheless, they were the ones negotiating what became the disaster of the Oslo peace. And one of the signers, one of the two signers, was sitting in a coffee house in Tel Aviv telling us all this, pretty well all the secrets of the Vatican in Paris. Now, here's how it worked. Rabin tried to hide Oslo from Paris. He caught on in March of 94, and then he sloughed it off initially. By April, he realized that was the game. That was the only game in town, and he wanted in. He sent a mission to the Vatican. I'll talk about that some other time. I know how that one worked, and I got information on the mission. In short, Paris said to the Vatican, they're going to negotiate a peace. We don't have much time. He invited them in or they would sabotage Oslo. The Oslo Peace Accord was the Vatican Peace Accord. They were one in the same. Paris's power brought in the Vatican just in time to sabotage. Now, look, it was the American Oslo Accord. It was George Bush, the father, who on Kennebunkport, Maine, September 23rd, 1992, told Rabin, you are going to negotiate with the PLO, whether you like it or not. This business, remember Clinton? You may not. I do. Addressing Congress, absolutely shocked that the PLO and Israel had come up with this peace accord. We don't even know if it's legal or not. Crap. They were in on it from day one. Ron Pudak told us all this stuff. We got it from him. In short, Paris brought the Vatican into what is known as the Oslo Peace. All right. Without diving, one of these days we must talk about me and Joel. We were an hour and a half there, and he just opened his mouth in the last 10 minutes. So, but we got what was going on. The Vatican were Oslo. Oslo was the Vatican's, all the same peace agreement. Now, what was Paris doing in Assisi, getting this Medal of Honor, first ever, from the monks, the Franciscan monks there? Now, look, guys, if you don't know this, the Franciscans were one of the two denominations. The Dominicans were the other, who were behind Operation Paperclip. They managed to smuggle. Now, the figures are, I'd say, if you add them all up, they got 100,000 Nazis out of Europe through their monasteries. They saved the Nazis. He's taking an award from an organization that literally sent the 30,000 to America, more than that to South America.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, basically, Barry is talking about the fact that Perez, in the last few days, has received from a Vatican order, I believe Dominicans, basically a piece of award that nobody else has ever gotten it before. Perez is being rewarded by, and now here's the he's a high Israeli official. He's the president, isn't he, at the present time?
Sure is.
President of Israel, and he's getting this award from the Vatican. Now, basically,
no.
From the Dominican Order. But basically, of course, Perez has been working behind the scenes with the Vatican going back to the 1990s, to the time of the sort of the Oslo Peace Accord. And Barry goes into the background of that, how Perez was certainly negotiating this. And basically, he brought the Vatican into those negotiations of the Oslo Peace Accord in the 1990s. And Perez has been very, very close to the Vatican. And now, of course, he gets a special award from the Dominican monks. But go right ahead with
No, it was Franciscans.
The Franciscan monks, okay.
I'm sure the Dominicans were, you know, applauding in the background somewhere, but it was the Franciscans.
Okay, but fine. Of course, that is the order from which our current pope comes. Is that correct?
No, he's Jesuit.
He's a Jesuit. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, boy. You know what? It's pretty easy, actually. The Franciscans and the Dominicans smuggled Nazis worldwide through their monasteries in the late 40s. Perez took an award for his unique contribution to the cause of peace from the monks who saved the Nazis. And by the way, these were not high-ranking Nazis. I grew up with them in Canada. They were really low-class Nazis, plenty of them. Nonetheless, the Franciscans saved them. Now, why would they reward Perez with a phony baloney honor for peace? This, now again, I don't want to toot my horn, but I've written about the cynical. That is supposedly the room where Jesus had his Last Supper. It's not. The building, it's a very, very holy Jewish yeshiva on Mount Zion. The second floor is where the Vatican, well, they consider it theirs. They consider it the place where Jesus broke bread and drank wine on his last day and all this. Perez, and by the way, I'm not going to dive into how I'm using the word Perez. The Israeli government gave custody. All right, listen, this is so weird, this story, but it's real. And again, I wrote about this 3-4 years ago. Jerusalem Post writes about it a month ago and without crediting me, and I'm getting sick of this. All right, no one will credit. I wrote this 3-4 years ago that Perez was working very hard to get the Vatican sovereignty over 41 sites in Israel, 29 of them in Jerusalem, on the Mount of Olives, as well as Mount Zion. Not tourist sites, not you can sell tickets, sovereignty. All right, I didn't know there was a seat on the board of the Cenacle. Never heard of it, no Israeli has heard of it. Nonetheless, there is. The government of Israel put, again, the Vatican on whatever it is that you get a seat for on the second floor of this yeshiva. They can now hold holy mass between 6 and 8 every morning. This begins in June, supposedly, again, according to the Post, and that, again, they quoted me every which way without citing me, and I resent that. Nonetheless, what they are claiming is here's the reward that Perez got for handing over the Last Supper room to the custody of the Holy Land. Again, it's a little complicated, but the Franciscan order runs the cenacle from June on.
And basically, when you're a tourist over there, why they take you over to Mount Zion, they show you this building, they show you this second-story room, and they said that's where the Last Supper was. And I don't really think it is, but certainly it is.
200 years old at most.
But basically, of course, this is what they say, and basically what's happened is this has been turned over, not simply just the building, but the sovereignty. In other words, this is almost the international sovereignty over this site has been given to the Vatican. And the question is why? Why is Perez working very closely with the Vatican? Why suddenly did this order to... This order said to give Perez a great prize recently, and why aren't you hearing about any of these things through the regular media?
While the storm clouds gather far across the sea, let us swear allegiance to a land that's free. Let us all be grateful for a land so fair. As we raise our voices in a solemn prayer.
Okay, Barry, go right ahead.
Oh, my. Now, again, this story, you know, I'm going to turn it into an article. I've been a little reluctant. I've told this story so many times, and, you know, now it's coming through. Well, I'm gonna put this in my inimitable fashion, turn it into an article. You have to understand, the previous pope, that was Benedict XVI, he volunteered for the Wehrmacht. And it's not even a good cover-up. There's pictures of him and stuff. This previous pope was in Hitler Youth. Fine. You had to. They made you. No one made him volunteer for the Wehrmacht. You've got this president of Israel taking an award from an organization that smuggled out about 100,000 Nazis worldwide. He welcomed, in 2009, Benedict XVI came to Israel, and he welcomed him. What is it? He likes Nazis that much? All right. Now we have got, all right, we'll get to the other stuff. I don't want to confuse you completely. Look, Perez flew to Italy, and he invited Pope Francis to visit the Holy Land. Now, again, I can't understand why any pope would name himself after a talking mule, but this one did, apparently. He came to Israel. Now, this gets weird, and talk about perking up ears. You wouldn't expect it. This came from the Times of Israel, and they did quite an article on this. Pope Francis, what a name. All right, he first visited Israel just as he began his position as provincial superior of the Society of Jesus in Argentina.
Hold that thought, Barry. We'll be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly Barry is talking about the relationship between certainly key people in Israel and the new pope. And there's a lot of strange things that are taking place today. We don't understand all the implications of them, but we do know that Pope Benedict was the first pope in 600 years to resign in office. Well, that certainly is a coincidence. And then, of course, we have a new pope. He is the first Jesuit pope ever to serve. Certainly, if you get into the background, if you haven't read the books by Tom Horn on certainly Petrus Romanus, and going into the Catholic prophecies that the current pope would be the last pope for the Catholic Church. There are a lot of strange things. Is this just coincidence, or is there some spiritual significance to what's taking place? Barry, you go ahead and pick up the story.
I don't even know how to respond to that. I just do the reporting, all right? I have no opinion.
Before you do any more reporting, why don't you tell our listeners how people can get your articles, how can people get this at your website, how people can get your PayPal button?
All righty. Now, first of all, my books are available at lulu.com. That's www.lulu.com. When you get there, you'll see a search box right in my name, Chamish, C-H-A-M-I-S-H. My newest book, which, you know, you might have to type it in separately, The Stinger, Not the Stunk. And it's got plenty of information on this topic, Vatican Paris. Again, ChamishLulu.com, The Stinger, Not the Stunk. And I was delighted to see on my website, Tom, my webmaster, is alive and put up the latest article that I just wrote. So that's BarryChamish.com. And there is a website, there is a PayPal button. If you want, and if you believe that somehow I'm doing something right, well, I'm real grateful to you if you contribute. You'll get something from me personally. All right, now let's go back to Pope Francis. Look, he arrived in Israel just as the Yom Kippur War broke out. Now, again, to get an Israeli journalist to actually pay attention to anything is really something. It really is an accomplishment that the Times of Israel actually broke down and the story, the Vatican story of how I won't go through the lie. Jorge Mario Bergoglio, that's his real name. How he changed that to the name of a talking mule, I'll never understand. I think Pope Jorge would have been better. He came to Israel just in October 1973, just as the Yom Kippur War broke up. Now, I'll go through what the Times of Israel determined. He stayed for a week. He had one day without a war where he visited in Kerem and Bethlehem, and then, darn, that war ruined his holiday. He spent the next 6 days at the American Colony Hotel. By the way, I know that hotel. You can cut the hatred of Jews with a knife in there. Nasty, nasty place. Nonetheless, that's where he stayed. Oh, let's use the quote. The Vatican says he spent the time studying the letters of St. Paul to the Corinthians. He got the books out of the Jerusalem branch of the Pontifical Biblical Institute. Look, there's no proof, and I don't want to say that he was there on purpose. All right, I don't know that he wasn't, but to get an Israeli to perk his ear at the timing, finally, is, you know, something. He was here when the war broke out. My feeling, I'll bet you anything, he was here with a purpose. That's my feeling. But I can't prove it. All I can say is that Paris invited the new pope to visit Israel last week, of course, when he was in Italy. You know what? 6 days ago. That's all. It's been such a busy week that this major visit, nonetheless, he invited Francis to come to Israel, not as a political leader, no way, as a spiritual leader. And then watch this. Here's the quote. Get ready, folks. This is what Paris actually said. He'll be a welcome guest in the Holy Land as a man of inspiration who can add to the attempt to bring peace in a stormy region, Paris said. All people here, without exception, without difference of religion or nationality, will welcome the newly elected pope. Who is he kidding? There are plenty of divisions along religion and nationality that will not welcome him. You've got this situation again. All right, we have to go a little in the background. Popes have been coming to Israel steadily since, actually, Pope John in the 60s got the ball rolling. But since then, my Lord, look, Benedict the 16th, we talked about, he came in 2009. His visit was nothing. And we'll return to it shortly. But his predecessor, Pope John Paul II, just set a landmark. He cut a deal with the PLO. They signed an agreement, it's called the Basic Agreement of the February 15, 2000. Well, its intention was to support the recognition of a special statute for the city of Jerusalem, in particular to safeguarding the freedom of religion, like that was ever in danger, but more to the point, the conscience, the identity, the sacred character of Jerusalem as a holy city with freedom of access to its holy places. Now, what the PLO got out of that, if they think that they come out of that ahead, they're wrong. For the time being, again, worst of enemies, best of friends, all that baloney, the Vatican with Paris in power, if the Post report is right, get to have Holy Mass at the Last Supper Room starting in June. All right? What we have, I don't know which Pope was worse, but we're going to return very shortly to the last Pope. Pope John Paul II was a disaster. But I want to remind you of something, and I'm going to be quoting something. Last November, the General Assembly of the UN voted to let the PLO join the General Assembly as a non-member state. Here is the communique of the Holy See. All right? This was their reaction. All right, I'm just going to quote some of this stuff. Oh, my goodness. They lead into it that they've always supported peace in the Middle East and have come up with agreements with the PLO in, well, to guarantee peace. What an organization to guarantee peace in Israel, the PLO. Well, let's look at the communique. On 15th of May 2009, while departing from Ben-Gurion Airport, Pope Benedict XVI expressed the following, and this has become a cliche amongst the Israeli far left. Here's the quote. No more bloodshed, no more fighting, no more terrorism, no more war. Instead, let us break the vicious cycle of violence. Let there be lasting peace based on justice. Let there be genuine reconciliation. Now, here comes this part that they really, really means. From Pope Benedict XVI, the last line is, let the two-state solution become a reality, not a dream. It's certainly a nightmare. Now, I continue with the communique of this really happy Vatican that the PLO now has a status in the General Assembly, but it's not good enough. The communique demands a sufficient solution to the existing problems in the region, and that means the respect for the legitimate aspirations of the PLO. Quote from the communique, therefore the Holy See has made a pressing appeal to the international community to increase its commitment and the adoption of suitable initiatives which may help to achieve a lasting peace that respects the rights of Palestinians and Israelis. Now get ready to what they really believe and what they're really pushing. the Holy See welcomes with favor the decision of the General Assembly by which Palestine has become an observer state of the United Nations. Yes, that is really a reason to be joyful. It is a propitious occasion to recall. Now, again, this is from their communique, that the common position of the Holy See and the Palestinian Liberation Organization expressed in the basic agreement of 15th of December, of February 2000, actually, intended to support the recognition of an internationally guaranteed special statute for the city of Jerusalem, aimed in particular to safeguarding the freedom of religion and the sacred character of Jerusalem. In other words, divide the damn city and let us take over sovereignty over our 29 sovereign sites inside Jerusalem. Did that sink in?
Yes, it did, Barry. Certainly. Obviously, they have their sights set on controlling these 29 sites, not simply just own the property, but sovereignty over them, national sovereignty. Go ahead.
They gave Paris a little medal for peace, for essentially it was a bribe. And here you get another medal. Good for you. You have a medal. Look, this business of what's going on in Jerusalem, I'm going to say it again. I reported this to me. It's old news. But again, if the Jerusalem Post, a mainstream, very undaring and very boring newspaper, actually writes what it did, well, they were 3-4 years, you know, behind me. But a month ago, they wrote that there was an agreement pushed through the Israeli government and the Catholic Church to regain religious stewardship over, well, the cenacle. And this enormous issue, they write, was pushed through without any public debate. Now, they're right. The public know nothing. And this trip, the fact that Paris accepted an award from the Franciscans, a Jew with any conscience would be appalled. Utterly, thoroughly appalled. But Jews don't know there was an Operation Paperclip. Jews don't understand that the previous Pope, Benedict, was a member of the Wehrmacht. Paris was working with both of them. It's an atrocity if you're a Jew, but that's what happened.
And I think, therefore, our listeners remember now, of course, that there were certainly these groups within the Vatican that were actually helping the Nazis escape. And basically, that was Operation Paperclip when they came to America, the rat line when they went to South America and to other countries. If you haven't read the books that we have on that, the elite, power elite of the secret Nazi plan and certainly America's Nazi secret two books go into that in great detail. And certainly, do you go into that in your latest book, Barry?
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Okay, fine. Well, then you want to get Barry's book, The Stinger, Not the Stung, as well. Go right ahead.
It's at Lulu, www.lulu.com. Write in my name in the search box, Chamish. Chamish. Now, again, for me, I don't understand why the Jews why they don't get it.
But the average American doesn't get this. They find it impossible to believe this couldn't be true. Trouble is, it is true. They can't understand why certain American banks and corporations would have funded the Nazis all during World War II. It doesn't make any sense. Of course it makes sense. If you want to have a war, you got to have a well-armed enemy. But, of course, we can't let the public realize the implications of the evil we're up against. Go right ahead, Barry.
Well, again, I'm going to quote the Post. Again, it bothers me. They're so late. But here's the quote. the Vatican hands over the use of the cenacle. That's the holy, well, that's where Jesus broke bread and drank wine the night before he died, to the custody of the Holy Land. That's the Franciscan order. They'll keep it open from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. every morning for Mass. Understand, now here's where it's such an important sentence, but it got buried and nobody noticed. Here's the quote from the Post again. The Vatican wants the Jews out of the Old City, and apparently Israel's government is agreeing with them. That's so, so, oh, how do we put it? It's the truth. For once, their government is working behind the backs of the Jews and handing over land to the Vatican illegally.
Well, of course, but the Wailing Wall, the parts of Jerusalem, where the Jews are, this is so important to the Jewish people. But, of course, unfortunately, the people who run the government have an entirely different agenda, and people don't understand that certainly they don't elect their government there. They're selected by what I consider the Brotherhood of Darkness. And basically, of course, the Jewish people are being betrayed, just as the American people are being betrayed. Our guest is Barry Shamish, and we'll be back in just a moment to wrap up the program here, right here at Radio Liberty. Well, Barry, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
All right. I may as well add this business on with Syria, an addition to this business with Syria. The Israeli government, not a month ago, gave a company, it's called Genie. It's Israeli, I think, founders, F.A. Tom. They granted them the right to drill for oil on the Golan Heights. Now, that's kind of a contentious issue. Putting it mildly, Syria still claims it's theirs. Well, the energy minister, Uzi Landau, he allowed the first bids for Golan permits this year, and Genie was given an exclusive license for nearly 400 square miles of Syrian territory. Again, I don't think the Golan is Syrian territory in particular. It's a buffer zone, but nonetheless, you weren't supposed to touch it. Look who is on the board of this. On the board of Genie is former Vice President Dick Cheney and News Corporation head Rupert Murdoch, and several other high-profile figures. In short, I don't know what's going on with Syria. I'm telling you the truth. I'm reading all the reports. I'm kind of getting a balance from these reports, a possible scenario of what went on. Let's throw in this just for the heck of it. A lot of big shots, they say it's prime oil drilling territory. The Israeli government handed over the Golan Heights to a lot of big shots to drill this year. That's it. That's nothing more. Nothing to add beyond that.
Well, I mean, but basically these are some of the movers and shakers of the world, as you well know. And there really is a small little clique that does run the world, and you've mentioned several of the names of several of them, seem to be associated with the drilling there in the Golan Heights. And what part is that going to play in the conflict between Israel and Syria? I don't know. I think we're in very, very dangerous times, don't you?
Oh, yes, I do. And once again, I'm going to repeat this. Israel is the sore thumb sticking out here. They just bombed Damascus, more than half the Arab world, essentially backed Israel. Look, my theme was, and it remains, well, if you've got someone doing your dirty work, they're your friends for the time being.
Okay, we're out of time, Barry. God bless. We'll talk to you next week.
I'll look forward to it.
Bye on this
one. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and basically that whole area over there is suddenly in the Middle East is a seething cauldron. And basically, Barry was just saying that, of course, the Israelis had recently given a large American corporation permission to start drilling for oil on the Golan Heights. And these are the mountains there on the east side of the Sea of Galilee that separates Israel from Syria. And who do you think is on the board of directors of these companies that are going to be drilling for oil there on the Golan Heights? Why, a man named Dick Cheney, former Vice President of the United States, certainly Rupert Murdoch, and many of the other members of the Brotherhood of Darkness, and they're going to be drilling for oil on the Golan Heights. What does this have to do with what's going on over there, the potential war between Israel and Syria? I don't know, ladies and gentlemen, but we're living in very, very dangerous times. And certainly the war with Syria could, down the line, result in a war with Iran. If there's a war with Iran, Iran is threatened to retaliate against America. How could Iran retaliate against America? The only thing that they could do would be to set off maybe one nuclear weapon. But if it went off 300 miles above Omaha, Nebraska, America would be plunged into darkness. We don't know what's coming down the line. First of all, let me suggest, if you haven't read the material or listened to the programs we have on the threat of an EMP attack, you need to get the four-CD set, the threat of an EMP attack. You need to get the talk given by Ambassador Henry Cooper of the threat of an EMP attack. And if you have access to the computer, go to highfrontier.com, highfrontier.com, and read Ambassador Cooper's latest information. It just came out yesterday. And I will tell you, it's one of the best summaries of the very real danger to the deaths of perhaps 1 to 200 million Americans, which could result from this. You can get certainly the 2004 Congressional Commission report, and you can get the book, A Nation Forsaken, all for Radio Liberty by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. How could this possibly be true? And you don't ever hear about this in the media? Well, that's because the media is controlled. You want to get the book, The New Media Monopoly, by Professor Ben Bagdikian. Just the book on the new media monopoly. We certainly have my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. And they're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. I've been at this for 50 years, as you know, and I will tell you that I feel that we are facing more of a threat than at any other time in the history of the last 50 years that I've been following things. Just make your preparations, hope and pray that you never need to use those preparations, but prepare yourself for the possibility of a very, very difficult time, certainly in the coming months that lie ahead. And we're talking within the next couple of years, there could be some dramatic changes in the very structure of our society. How could this come about? Well, I believe that God is just, and his justice will not sleep forever. I don't believe that God is, that the United States is mentioned in prophecy. How could the most powerful nation in the world not be mentioned in prophecy? Didn't God know America was going to be founded? And I'm sure he did know America was going to be founded. And basically, there are references, though, to Mystery Babylon. Mystery Babylon, look them up in your concordance, look at all the various references. And when they talk about the financial center of the world being destroyed, and the ship captains watching it, and certainly the merchants of the world weeping because now they can no longer sell their products, because, of course, the Mystery Babylon has been destroyed. Is that Wall Street? Is that New York City? I don't know. We're going to have to watch and see. But I can tell you, we're living in very, very dangerous times, because behind everything going on are powerful spiritual forces. And that is, of course, what most people miss when they talk about this. They look at things from a political point of view, a historical point of view. They look at it from a cultural and ideological point of view. But you must look at it from a spiritual point of view and understand we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. So please pray for America. Pray for revival. Remember our number, 1-800-544-8927. But please pray for Radio Liberty, our provision and our protection.
Let us all be grateful.
and gentlemen, to Power Hour Radio Show. It is the 6th of May, 2013, and the war is on. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, if you've not been watching television, listening to any radio at all, and you find yourself saying, what war? Well, it appears that Israel has declared war on Syria. Oh, they just dropped some bombs. Did they really declare war? They drop bombs all the time. Not good. So much happening around the world today. I mean, it's got to be a shock for people to wake up and learn, as we did over the weekend, that Israel attacked Syria. Now, the question is, was it a nuclear bomb? Was it depleted uranium? Questions being asked by everyone saying it looked like a nuclear bomb. And what are they thinking? Why would they do an unprovoked attack on Syria? And my question was, how did they get there? And of course, they had to go fly over Lebanon. Now the question is, have they invaded Lebanon also? It could be the beginning of the big one. This unprovoked attack on Syria. And don't kid yourself,